the vine is withered as the fig tree droops, and the pomegranate, even the palm and apple trees, all trees in the land are dry. Surely all joy has come to disappointment in the sons of the earth. That was Joel chapter 1, verse 12. Our daily study for today in the scriptures, our verse from Joel chapter 1 in the version of Yours Truly from 2003. Little children, now we turn to our continued study of the article, The Ark of Urartu, The Orient Express, Part 2, Chapter 9, Paragraph 7. And we see an illustration. Looks like a photograph, doesn't it? It's from the museum, the Louvre in Paris. And we see the person there. Appears to have long hair, perhaps. That's what that looks like. The hair is resting on his own shoulder, and then he's got hair, perhaps that's hair also, that's streaming down there, hanging down in front of his chest, and then he's got some implements in his lap, it looks like. Maybe it's one implement, and he's got in his left hand some kind of winged bird, right? It's called the Stela of the Vultures, and Ningirsu with Anzu. Stela of the Vultures is the full name of that what we call piece of artwork. But the thing is, yesterday we talked about Ningirsu, who's the Lord of Girsu, and he's also called Ninurta. It's just another one of his names, and he is the god of Lagash. Now, the fame of Gudea is recorded from the work of G. Maspero. Quote, Gudea, son of Urbau, who, if not the most powerful of its princes, is at least the sovereign of whom we possess the greatest number of monuments, captured the town of Anshan in Elam. And this is probably not the only campaign in which he took part, for he speaks of his success in an incidental manner, and as if he were in a hurry to pass to more interesting subjects. That which seemed to him important in his reign, and which especially called forth the recognition of posterity, was the number of his pious foundations, distinguished as they were by beauty and magnificence. The gods themselves had inspired him in his devout undertakings, and had even revealed to him the plans which he was to carry out. An old man of venerable aspect appeared to him in a vision, and commanded him to build a temple. As he did not know with whom he had to do, Nina, his mother, informed him that it was his brother, the god Ningirsu. This having been made clear, a young woman furnished with style and writing tablet was presented to him, Nisaba, the sister of Nina. She made a drawing in his presence and put before him the complete model of a building. He set to work on it con amore and sent for materials to the most distant countries, to Magan, Amanus, the Lebanon, and into the mountains which separate the valley of the upper Tigris from that of the Euphrates. End quote. From History of Egypt, Chaldea, Syria, Babylonia, and Assyria by G. Maspero, Volume 3, Part A, London, 1903. The consort, of the god Ningirsu was also the goddess Nina. It's fascinating, isn't it? This is his brother. Gudea's brother Ningirsu, his mother told him. So doesn't it seem appropriate that this person, Gudea, would be called Ninus? Or something related to this god Ningirsu? It's very, very easy to picture Gudea as Ninus, based on all, and also the wife or the consort of Ningirsu was called Nina. I mean, all of these things just seem to proliferate and abound endlessly with different forms of the name Ninus. Lagash's temple was called Ininu and dedicated to the god Ningirsu, as we learned yesterday. So there's so many different things that point to at least the possibility that this person, Gudea, was the person of Ninus, but also his military exploits. You know, the fact that he apparently was very accomplished in that way would fit very well with Ninus, who was, of course, a great warrior and the founder of the Assyrian Empire. And Chedorlaomer, as we're going to learn, does have considerable linguistic connection, or bears good relation to the name Gudea linguistically, so that there's no reason why we would resist the idea that Gudea was Chedorlaomer, and that he also fits the description of Ninus extremely well when we consider the things we've considered, as we did yesterday from the, and I mentioned it was wrongly, I called it the Book of Jubilees. It's not Jubilees, of course, it's the Book of Jasher that we were considering yesterday, despite what I said when I mentioned it, when I called it Jubilees a couple of times in the video yesterday. But no, it's the Book of Jasher we were studying that shows such an excellent correlation between the deeds of Chedorlaomer and those of Gudea, specifically in the chronology, which is established from the Book of Jasher in concert with the scriptures from the Septuagint that gave us the date of the birth of Abram, which we needed in order to put an absolute date on the time frame given in the Book of Jasher, right, which was the 10th year of Abram's dwelling in the land of Canaan, having arrived there at the age of 55, and also the fifth year. So we did a calculation, which, and the fifth year of Abram's dwelling in the land of Canaan, which we mentioned yesterday also, was 2146. 2146 being when Abram was 60 years old, born in 2206. And the years, of course, counting backwards in the BCE time period. So 60 years after 2206 is 2146, year 5 of Abram's dwelling in Canaan. And from that, since that was the year in the Book of Jasher when this great, great warrior, Chedorlaomer, came with several other kings on a great military march to subdue the land of Canaan. In that year, when Abram was 60 years old, right? that would make sense, that we could consider that as the ending of the domination of Nimrod, who was the lord of Chedorlaomer up to that point. So therefore, we take that as essentially, at least in one sense, it's the year one of the reign of Gudea, or Chedorlaomer. So from that point, we can consider that the king who had been ruling as Nimrod, and when we identify him as Naram-Sin, or Naram-Suin, the Akkadian king, who ruled for 56 years, in, you know, at least one account, counting back, therefore, adding the 56 onto the 2146, and then adding the 15 years of the king, Manish-Tishu, I believe it was, and then Rimush, 9 years, and then 55 years for Belus, or as he was called at times, but Sargon, the Akkadian king who began the dynasty and was said to, at least according to the... I should show you that. I want to show you that. Where is it? Here, I think it'll pop up maybe if we try and bring it up. Where is it? It didn't come up. Let's see. It will pop up if I didn't close it down, of course. Oh, I was working today, yeah, on something. Let's see. Oh, here it is. It's one of these. One of these two. I don't know if I'll get the right one or not. Looks like this is it. Let's see if I can just drag it down here. Drop it in. Yeah. Dynasty of Kish, Uruk, and then Akkad, Sargon. So we see here, I wasn't able to show this very well. I didn't show it very well, but Sargon is given, according to some accounts, 40 years, but then this other account in the next column over accounts him 55 years. So we chose that selection, the 55 years, from 2270 to 2215 in their chronology, because it began in this particular chronology that they use in approximately 2270, so they don't know the actual date, but they gave 55 years there, the difference between those 2 years. So we took the 55, then we took the 9 years of Ramesh and the 15 years of Manish-Tishu, and we said 56 years for Naram-Suin, and we accepted those other year numbers. And when we did that, let's go back here into the calculator. The total number we got, adding up all those years, was 2281 BCE. Very importantly, because then, and I didn't manage to show that very clearly if we subtract 1460, but yesterday I tried to show it. Subtract 1460, which is the number of years given by George Syncellus for the Assyrian Empire, the duration of the Assyrian Empire, which by some accounts began with Ninus, but in his account it begins with Belus or Sargon. So we have it in this case. The difference is remarkably 821 BCE, the end date of the Assyrian Empire being 821 BCE, as established by the eclipse, you know, which aligns our chronology and provides the basis for the dating of also King Solomon, and, you know, that whole time period. By raising the chronology by 47 years at the time period of King Solomon, all the way back to Well, all the way actually lower than that. It starts at around 747 Tiglath-Pileser, right? And going the 47 years before that were the ones that sort of got lost from history. I'm trying to think, when did Tiglath-Pileser start? Did he start in 747 or did that when he ended? I'm trying to think. I think that's when, in 727, yeah, that's when he started, I think, somewhere around 747. But he ended somewhere around 727, and that was I'm trying to think of the name of the king. The king who ruled just prior to Sargon II. Oh, his name escapes me right now. Oh, he's Esarhaddon? I think it's Esarhaddon. Esarhaddon the... I don't know if that's the right name. Esarhaddon. No, it's not Esarhaddon. Who is Esarhaddon? I don't know. Let me look it up. Okay. What's the name? Assyrian king. Before or after Tiglath-Pileser. Or let's just say 727. Who is it? Shalmaneser, that's who it is. Shalmaneser the Fifth, yeah. Shalmaneser the Fifth was the one. Not Esarhaddon, of course. But Shalmaneser... prior to him was Tiglath-Pileser, but then the beginning of Tiglath... Here he's dated 744. Or 745 for year one, so the 47 years add on. Go back prior to that. The king that preceded Tiglath-Pileser was the one that was causing the discrepancy of 46 or 47 years between our chronology and the conventional chronology. But it was determined by an identification of an eclipse which was wrongly identified by them as being 763, was it? Yeah. Whereas our eclipse is more like 809, I think. Let me think now. Yeah. Anyway, the exact which is a 40, that would be a 47 year difference, right? So the correct identification of the eclipse was the problem, that, or the good thing that gave us our chronology. Jules Oppert wrote this beautiful letter about that subject. That's too bright, isn't it? Wait a minute, that's way too bright. Okay. I translated his letter, Jules Oppert's letter, where he explains all this about this time period. But the 821 is the end of that Assyrian Empire. In our chronology, it turned out to be 821. And I think we're going to mention that too, down here. We've got so much time left, it's good. But I want to explain some of these things that we talked about yesterday. And what I further researched or discovered also. But look at this. We're going to go down here. I think we talk about the 821 somewhere here. Where's the 821? Where do we mention it? Let's search for it. 821. Jehovah willing. And I'm not looking. Okay, there we go. I wasn't focused on the app. 821. There it is. Yeah. That's in... So next, it's the paragraph that we're intending to study tomorrow. It's going to mention the 821, but I also need to search that, come to think of it. Let's search that. Let's see. On our website, 821, see where that comes up, because I want to know more about it. Just again, remind myself of it. Let's see here. 821. Trojan War. Let's see. TWT. Something to do with Shawshank there in one article, but I'm not sure if that's our final date for that. Let's see, in that case, for that particular king. Let's see what we have here. 821. Oh, I'm thinking, I know where it would be, yeah. Or I think I know where it would be, in the Crucible article, maybe. Hmm. 821. Let's look up. I know what I want to look up. Yeah, 809. Oh, here it said. Okay. Oh. No, 821 is a date given by somebody else, I guess, because 809 is the date we gave in Wild Road Ahead to History. I just found that here. Yeah, that makes more sense. 809. So let's find that. Wait a minute, I thought it was in... Let's go ahead and see. The Crucible, yeah. Yeah, I need to get it and bring it over. Here we are. See where we are here. Yeah, I want to show you something else here. Right, that's going to be, hopefully, if we get to it, it'll be interesting. So that 821. I don't know if this will be the right thing. It didn't show up. I just searched it. Oh, 821, yeah. Wait. It says it's there. Oh, yeah, I have to search 809. Okay, yeah, right. That's what I want to search. There it is, 809. Yeah, right. That's what I wanted, this table. It's exactly what I wanted to see here. So it's 13 years, 12 years? 12 years. Different from 821. Yeah, well, I don't know. So all of what I'm about to say now is going to be, we'll have to redo it because we should be using 809 as the end of the empire. I think. Is that true? Or Asher Dan, wait a minute. Ariba Marduk, Arbaces, began to rule, but he's during the time of Ashurdan. Well, Ashurdan began to rule. Oh, yeah. And this is the list of Babylonian kings and Assyrian kings. So, well, that's the Babylonian king, 821. Okay, yeah, right. So where do we get 809? 809 is the Babylonian king. And then we have Nabonassar, 747, whereas Tiglath-Pileser, and then Pul, there's the 46 years between Tiglath-Pileser and Pul, 744 back to 790. Which is the time period of Pul, not given another name more than that. Sort of an indistinct name. But Ashur-nirari, you know, many people think that Pul is the same person as Tiglath-Pileser, and they don't have these 46 years. But Ashur-nirari, 799, and Ashur-dan, you see. Then there was this event that happened in 809. And something about the eclipse is what, you know, what anchored that event that year. But, okay, so 817, Ashur-dan, but the Assyrian Empire doesn't appear to end, does it, in 821, but something happened here that Pul was somebody who took over, and he was a different king, right? And that was in 790. At least that's what we've been asserting. So that would be the end. The end of it looks like it's sometime around the time of Ashurbanipal was when these events, and because he's called Sardanapalus, if you look at it, Sardan, and Pul and Apollos are sort of similar. So Ashurdan and Sardanapalus fits perfectly to identify the last king of the empire. Now, other people have dated it 821 for the end of the empire, so it's not quite right. It's somewhere around 809, I think. But I mean, we'll investigate that now that we have more information. What I'm going to show us today will hopefully prepare us for that. So, coming back to our article again, we don't want to look at this search right now. The 821, it's okay that we use 821. Because it was a date that other people believed was the end of the empire, and that's the number, therefore, that could have been used for the basis for the other numbers we're going to be using. So when we do these calculations that I'm going to show you just now, which are, let's say we start at the time of 2747 BCE, and then we subtract the 260. Let's go and look at it. I've got it ready here, I think. 263 years here, given by Africanus. 263 years for Dynasty 1 of Egypt. The total, 263. Africanus gave for Dynasty 1, right? And there's Africanus, his name. And it's Manetho's Dynasty 1. And when we do that calculation, we subtract the 263. And then the 215 years of the Arabian kings that Mr. Jackson gives us, that number 215 from him. Let's get this back to something that's darker. There we go. That's going to get, then we add 12 years because that goes 12 years past the beginning of the Akkadian Empire, according to Mr. Jackson. And we get 2281, the same number that we mentioned yesterday and that we talked about today also, which is very much calculable, right? We calculated it from the time of Abraham and Gudea and the time of these Akkadian kings. The reigns of the Akkadian kings gave us the answer, 2281, for the year one of Sargon. So this is perfectly in agreement. Therefore, the date 2747 that we've been mentioning as the death of Osiris, which could then be taken as the beginning of the Egyptian Dynasty 1. And that, subtracting 263, 215, and adding 12, gives us 2281. What if we said 2747 minus 62, which is the first king on the list? We get what? 2685, the beginning of the Old Kingdom. So that's also good. And one more thing. What if we say 2747, subtract 253, which is the number that Africanus gave, even though the number is added up to 263, he gave the number 253. So we can use that number instead of 263, 2747, but let's not say 2747, let's call it 2737, which we know was well, in this case, it's 10 years later than the 2747. But in our other discussion, when we had 2745 as the beginning of the dispersion, I'm trying to see here, what does 2737 mean? Well, 2737, I think we should just look at it as the beginning of the rule of the Chinese, is it the Flame Emperor? Shennong, I think. Anyway, it's the beginning of the rule of one of the Chinese emperors, right? When he was battling also with Qi Yu, who we take to be the same person as Nimrod. So we have these beautiful dates that we can use, not just in the time period of Egypt and Shinar, but also China. So minus 253 and then minus 215, we get the same answer when we add the 12, and that is 2281 again. So, I mean, there's more than one way to get 2281 that seems reasonable, though. Remarkable. The other thing is, subtracting the 12, if we didn't add the 12, we'd get 2269, which is very close to 2268, which is this wonderful number that we have found to provide insight in our own chronology, and because it's the time difference between Adam and the deluge, and between the deluge and the founding of Solomon's Temple, and between Solomon's Temple and 1255 CE, which is the date of some important event to do with one of the ancestors of the Habsburg dynasty. So we've got, you know, this, we've got these amazing dates that are connected by this number 2268, and then we have this 2269, which is almost the same number, when we take that as the end of the Arabian Kings there. Just makes things easier to digest when these numbers align. But whether it's true or not, we'll have to investigate further. That pretty well concludes our study again for today. Thank you so much for listening and watching once again. It's my pleasure to be with you. I'm Ward Green, and I love you very much. In my behalf, this is Sissy, and this is Star, saying bye for now. We studied Chapter 9, Paragraph 7 of Part 2 of the article, The Ark of Urartu, the Orient Express, today. I'm still getting used to my new operating system, and finding that sometimes the sound doesn't work, the sound controls, but there may be a way to sort that out. I'm still working on it, and there's other things that have gone wrong with it, too, the operating system, too. I'll talk about it maybe sometime.